Ambassador Abbey, welcome back. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks, and you? A little bit early for me?
Yeah, I think it's actually perfect. I think you're doing very well so far.
Thank you.
Well, mostly.
Yeah.
Ian, what have you called them? Handbrakes.
Handbrake habits.
Do we all have handbrake habits?
We all have handbrake habits.
And what are they?
So those handbrake habits, so I'm sure.
Can we focus on Zanati's handbrake?
Oh, wow.
We can discuss Zanati with pleasure. Zanati, are you ready to be discussed?
That's okay. Good.
So what are handbrake habits in general?
Handbrake habits are those habits that inhibit us from doing something. And it's that feeling, you've probably all had it, that feeling just before you convince yourself why not to do something. So you may have this great idea, like getting up in the morning, Howard, and saying, I'm going to play great music, and then decide you're going to play bad music. No, that was a joke, Howard.
No, because I never decide to play bad music. Well, it's never happened that I've played bad music, has it? Mm. Oh, sometimes a nutty chooses something.
Yeah, okay. They slip in.
Right, exactly.
But on a serious note, Howard, just thinking about that, the way you said you never play bad music, it's interesting that our natural tendency is to think about the negative. We always feel comfortable, ironically, in the negative. So we always talk ourselves out of things.
Right.
We always, if you're faced with a problem or a challenge, we all look at the negative first and talk about all the things that we can't do rather than what we can do.
So is that insecurity? Is that lack of confidence? Why do we convince ourselves of the negative first?
Because it's easier.
Right.
And it's easier because it's easier to deal with things that you essentially don't have to fix. And I guess.
Right. I guess it's kind of my theme where I say, we like winter because winter doesn't disappoint us.
Yeah.
We don't expect blossoms and trees and greenery and joy in winter. We expect to be cold and barren in winter.
And it lives up to its reputation.
Right. And it doesn't disappoint.
Yeah. And I think for me, if you look at it and you bring this back to the work environment, I run a lot of workshops where we do strategic thinking. And one of the areas we focus on is problem solving, is looking at our areas where you want to improve your business. And I feel like it's a whiny Wednesday when you sit around, because everybody feels this is their
time opportunity just to vent.
Yeah, to bring their pickles and just unpack them. And how I started is with a great idea that I learned through some great ideation or design thinking techniques where we talk about opposite thinking. And what we do is we start with the negative because that's our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So we talk about, all the things that are like wrong with the situation. So you'll say, well, if you're going to run your radio show, you don't do any preparation or you just do things that your audience don't listen to. And you do that, and you start from that point. It's easy for people to generate ideas. The important thing is to not stick with those. It's to then take those and turn those into awesome ideas and say, well, I'm never going to come to a show unprepared. I'm never going to not listen to what the audience wants to hear. I'm not going to have the discussion debate. And what that does is it changes people's mindsets. Now, why I make that such an important point is you want people to think creatively. But if you want people to think creatively, you have to start with a place where they're comfortable to start. And sadly, I say it sadly because it is negative, but sadly you have to start in a person's comfort zone, and that is typically where our negative is.
I get it. I understand. Look, what I find also in working with a lot of companies is there's if the culture isn't correct, if the culture of creativity hasn't been fostered and created, then people don't, then they just simply won't be. They won't take chances. They're going to feed back that which they know is safe, and they won't be criticized for.
Absolutely. And if you just have this posturing attitude, or you just have this pleasing attitude, you're just going to get frustrated because you're just going to think that you're doing the right thing. Meantime, you're frustrating yourself because you're not opening yourself out to challenging the status quo. And I think that's something that we are fearful of. We accept that.
But sometimes we're fearful for good reason. In other words, we're working in an environment where maybe I'm meant to be a little bit more creative, and I keep coming up with ideas and I keep suggesting different things. And every time I'm told all the reasons why this is never going to work, because maybe my manager's in the more negative space, and maybe he or she's nervous to try something different. Ultimately, I learn the behavior within my own environment that is acceptable, safe, and isn't going to exhaust me.
And that's why it's so important to understand how the other people think. And that's why I always say you've got to prove yourself wrong sometimes. And when I say prove yourself wrong is you've got to have the discussion with yourself about why you believe your point of view is right and look at it sometimes from the other person's perspective. What drives them? Because what drives another person may not be your driver. And that's a very important aspect.
I'd love to hear from you on 34519 or 061-895-1019. It doesn't need to be in a work environment. It could be in a school environment. It could be talking to your children's teachers in that environment. It could be a work environment. Do you find this? Are you a victim? And I use that word, but are you a victim of stifled creativity? Do you find that you're in an environment, that has stifled creativity or just worn you down if you look at how you came into the environment versus where you are today? Are you happy with your creativity process and the risk taking, the risk that you're prepared to take, or are you unhappy with it? Maybe you're exactly the opposite. Maybe you are in an environment that encourages out of the box thinking. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'm chatting to Ian Bassarabin. We are talking about handbrakes. We're talking about the things that stop us from achieving that which we should. What are the other types of handbrakes?
So I think some of the other types of handbrakes, I mentioned not trusting your gut, not trusting your instinct. We often, and as I say, it's that feeling where you get up and you say, I'm going to do this amazing thing, and there's a great article out there about, they call the 5 second rule. Within 5 seconds, if you don't act on that, your brain will then talk you out of it. And it's been cognitively proved.
So I always thought the 5 second rule was the floor.
Yeah, I also thought it was right, but I've learned otherwise. And
I find I've always slowed the counting down on those 5 seconds because nobody wants to throw away food.
Especially good food. And the 5 second rule tells you to stop and be cognizant of what you're thinking and act before your brain takes over and talks you out of it. Howard, have you heard of the Fosbury flop?
No, Fosbury flop. I like the alliteration.
Yeah, it's quite a nice one. So I found this, and it was a nice story that talks about going with your gut. So as many of you would know, the high jump, it's always the most awkward athletics routine I've seen.
You know, I've never really been a high jumper myself.
No, me neither.
Despite, strangely enough, my physique.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Zanati. That's rude. Wow. Wow. No, I've often been asked if I would compete, you know, in pole vaulting, high jumping, but I just didn't feel,
You stick to marathon running.
Right. Exactly.
So back to the Fosbury flop, and maybe we should ask Louis Karpus if he knows about this. But interestingly, this was a gentleman, an American athlete, called Dick Fosbury, who in 1968 at the Mexico Olympics, he was terrible at high jumping, and he changed the way that high jumping was done. High jumping was typically done head first. Mm. It was actually called the straddle. I think it was called the straddle technique. Mm-hmm. And he was the one that decided, well, it would be far better to jump off the wrong foot, as they call, with his back arched and go over, because it would give him more height. Mm. And everybody criticized him afterwards, and it became, as you know, today everybody does it that way.
I really wouldn't know, but I'm going to take it.
Yeah, but you can practice at home later, Howard.
I'm going to. What is that, straddle? What was that?
No, this is the Fosbury flop.
Okay, fine. Mm.
And it's not a cake that doesn't drop.
Right, exactly. Absolutely fascinating. We're going to hold it there. We're going to come back in just a few moments. Hi, Howard. When we entertain the negative, you give yourself a back door to back out or bail out of doing something. As a learner support specialist, my students come to me with the bailout mindset. That's Mary Ann from Northcliffe. Mary Ann, thank you. That is interesting. So how do you, Mary Ann, I'd love to hear further from you, especially as a learner support specialist. How do you change that mindset? What do you do to change the mindset? Absolutely fascinating, because I think we are all learning challenged or disabled in one way or another. We just should recognize it. We've all got our things the areas that we are compromised, and we've all got that mindset in one area or another. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 061 0891-895-1019. How do you change that mindset? I mean, when you talk about that high jumper, the fact that he had the confidence and that he was laughed at to some extent, but yet he was still able to do what he wanted to do and change the way in which it was done. That's an incredible amount of internal strength.
Absolutely. And I think that's where we kind of give in. And I like what Mary Ann says about the bailout, because it's easy to just have that herd mentality. It's just to go with the herd and say, well, everybody does the jump this way, to carry on the analogy. And that's the way we do it. But he was prepared to
take a chance.
To take a chance. And it changed everything from not just the thinking, but also what was needed. And we can come back to the environment after.
And especially on a world stage. It is 7:29. Let's, we'll be trying.
We do. Zanotti,
eh? Yeah. We are trying, hey? We fetch a lot.
A lot.
and Zanotti seems to be learning quite well. Eh?
Yeah.
But Howard, going back to Andre Agassi, wasn't he, bring it back to our topic, wasn't he one that broke the rules of Wimbledon?
He broke the rules.
Yeah. He wore the colorful outfits and
it was the first time. And, yeah, you know, he had the long hair.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if the long hair was in of itself different, but he came onto the court completely differently to how everybody else did.
Absolutely. And he believed in himself. And as you said, it came out probably in his autobiography, but it must have been a way of him expressing himself. In a way that he felt comfortable. And I think that's one of the other things, is that you need to be comfortable in yourself, and then you can pretty much do anything, but it starts with yourself.
See, I wonder, and I'm just taking a look at that, and I hadn't gone there at all, but I mean, obviously Luke Hoppus brought it up. Andre Agassi was, according to a lot of his material, was quite, constrained by his father, and by this life that he was forced to lead because of his talent. I just wonder if by becoming creative in the areas that he could be flexible with, that is maybe why he survived an industry that he couldn't really cope in and actually flourished, giving him almost an outlet to say, this is where I'm going to be me. And I don't care what anybody says around me.
Yes, and that was probably something where he developed that skill, that talent, where he felt confident playing tennis.
Right.
But he also felt that because he was confident doing that, he could equally showcase a different side of him. He could be himself. And I think to a large degree, that's one of the biggest problems, is we are scared to be ourselves because we're living in somebody else's vision. We're trying to.
Whether it's our parents, absolutely, our spouse, our friends, our boss, we spend so much of our time conforming to other people's expectations of us. And of course, many of those expectations are not unreasonable. You know, we do live in a society and we do have to conform. The question is, how much flexibility do we have in terms of creativity?
And I think it's a case of more being, it's awareness. It's more about being aware rather than conforming. If you're aware of what society expects of you, but you're aware and you manage that, it's far easier. And going back to the habit side of things, it's ironic to think that 40% of our actions come from habits. Now, if you think about it, that's significant. And on the one hand, it's good to have habits. You know, there's good habits, but equally there's bad habits as well. And I think the most important thing for us is to focus on just being cognizant of our bad habits. What is stopping us from being who we really want to be? And if you can take 5 minutes and just, why I say do things differently. And I'm saying even take a book and read a book from the back to the front. You know, try it. You know what I mean? What's the worst that can happen? You might see things differently.
Right.
Try a different morning routine. You know, eat your hamburger. We're talking about hamburgers. Eat your hamburger upside down. You know, all I'm saying is look at life, address a problem differently to our normal linear approach, and that will take that handbrake away. It'll stop us from feeling inhibited, because I think it's been I think Albert Einstein gets the accolade for it, but they say if you try keep doing the same thing over and over again, you'll end up with the same result. So let's try to change it.
Yeah, speaking of that, we're going to be talking to Anthony Reich and about the possible Israel elections. So exactly on that subject. Ian Bassarabi, fascinating. Really, really enjoyable discussion this morning. Certainly something that I enjoyed tremendously. At 7:44, let's take a quick look at what's happening on our highways.